I'm jumping the gun because I'm so excited to get to this conversation. A very, very thought-provoking night last night, a thought-provoking experience, going to the premiere of the new movie Krotoa, which opens on circuit this Friday. And you might have heard the buzz about this film already, because it's really been notching up award after award on its path through various film festivals around the world. Eight of them that I know of, including Best Film at the Harlem International Film Festival in New York a while ago. And we finally get the chance to see it here on circuit this week. You're going to want to see it. That's the first thing I have to say. You should go and see it. And then you're going to want to think about it and think about it some more. And then definitely you're going to want to talk about it and talk about the stories that it tells and the themes it touches on, because it weaves together so many elements of in many cases, our untold South African stories, and particularly so much of the women whose stories have been absent from our history books. And it's a wonderful pleasure and honor to welcome in studio today the film's director, Roberta Durant, and lead actress, Crystal Donna Roberts, who did a spectacular job. Congratulations on your movie.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us. Thank you so much.
Roberta, if I may start with you, I mean, this is based on an actual story. It's based on an actual South African woman, Krotoa, who quite unusually had her name recorded all those years back in the early days of the Cape Colony, as it was then. Where did you first hear of her story?
Well, we actually answered a brief put out by the SABC some years back. They were doing a strand of programs called Hidden Histories. Mm. And Kayan Williams, who's the writer of the script, made a documentary for this strand of programming on Krotoa. She came to me and she said, you know, and she wanted to make the story. Mm. So, you know, at that stage, we did very, very thorough research. And, you know, she wrote and directed and I produced it. And when after that, you know, we had lots of discussions, and Kay said that she really felt that there was a narrative feature here, because she had such a dramatic life. And so we decided, you know, to put a proposal together, and then we, you know, had to get funding for it, etc. So that was how it was birthed. So we had done this very, very thorough research, and Kay had, you know, done her own research. She didn't want to read anybody else's interpretation. She wanted to do her own research from the ground up. And, you know, basically then the feature film that we finally made, we say is inspired by historical fact, because, you know, there is a certain amount written down, not much, because, you know, I mean, A, women weren't written about much anyway.
Yeah.
And then there's obviously oral tradition, and then there's various historians' deductions and conclusions from the facts at their disposal. So, you know, there are a lot of theories about all the different stages of her life. So, you know, you have to kind of like make choices, you know, or Kay had to make certain choices about, you know, what to include and what not to include. So, you know, it was quite heavily workshopped, and together with Margaret Goldsmith, Kayan Williams, you know, the script came about, which we have finally made.
Now, for the sake of those who haven't seen the movie, which will be most of our audience, obviously not having had a chance to get to the circuit yet, it is the story of a young girl, 11 or 12 years old, removed from her very close-knit Khoi family and taken to what was then the fort, which later became the castle, to essentially become an interpreter for Jan van Riebeeck. And her ability with language, her very bright mind, obviously led to her increasing an influence in that role and finding herself in a position stranded effectively between two very different cultures, and finding herself, as you've narratively told in the film, not quite able to fit in on either side anymore. You have a number of women associated with this project, from the writers to yourself as director and obviously on the cast. Was it a conscious decision that this was a woman's story that needed to be told largely by a team of women, or did that just happen naturally along the way?
I think it happened naturally along the way, but I am very pleased that it you know, it resulted in that, because I do think that, you know, a woman's voice for a woman's driven story, which Krotoa is important. And, you know, the film is very layered. and hopefully the audience gets the layers and doesn't take things too literally, because there are a lot of metaphors in the film as well. I'm very pleased that we were the group of women there. We weren't only women, by the way. We had a wonderful male DOP and a wonderful male art director. So not
and
everybody.
Of course some fantastic male actors as well. We
and
have to
yes,
give them
course.
A nod. Yes, Crystal, if I may, when did you become associated with this project?
When I basically found out about the audition, and I've said it before, I have to admit, I'm very embarrassing about it. I never really knew much about her when I found out about the audition. And then, you know, that's when the research process started. Mm. And after I auditioned, before I even knew that I had the part, my interest in her life, it just grew stronger and stronger. Mm. So, yeah.
You're not alone, I have to concede as well. I was unfamiliar with her story, and it was fascinating to watch. And it was, for me personally, fascinating to watch the story told and to think back how I was taught that piece of South African history in a government school in 1983 or 84, and how different the story was I was seeing on screen was hugely interesting. Obviously, as an actress, this is a gift of a role. It is a character so deep and layered and nuanced, so strong and fierce in some respects, and so incredibly fragile and vulnerable in others. It must have been a huge pleasure to sink your teeth into that role.
It was, and a lot of people, you know, it's very weird, because when it's like you say, it was a huge gift, and this role comes with a massive red ribbon tied around it. But it's not one of those things where you go to work and you're like, oh, let's go have fun, you know. Yeah. Even though it is, you feel so blessed to be able to play this role, you realize the sort of seriousness of it because of the fact that she's such an important historical figure, you know. But it's something that I will be bragging about till I'm super old.
And you should be too. It was a fantastic performance. Right, let's get to one of the tough questions, which is the portrayal of Jan van Riebeeck. I was quite surprised at how relatively sympathetic the portrayal of Jan van Riebeeck was on screen last night. It was something that kept me awake all night. There is a rape scene. That element is touched on, but he's not the monster that history might have made of him, or that another storyteller might have made of him on screen. Talk to us about the decision to create the character in that light, although I guess it was the writer's decision more than yours, Roberta. But is it something that you struggled with, debated between the team?
I think there was there was obviously a lot of debate. It was a very conscious decision. The reason why that decision was made was that if you look at the facts of her life, the fact that he elevated her to a point where he was taking a woman, into a very male-dominated world of interpreting and translating for him, tells us that he must have in some way been sympathetic towards her or had an attraction for her. Mm. You know, and look, the attraction and the rape really needs to be seen as a metaphor in terms of an attraction for what the early European settlers found, here. I mean, they wanted to settle here. And it's also a metaphor for the taking of without necessarily the necessary respect that goes with that taking of. The respect of what they found here, and I think, I mean, you can't get away from that. I mean, if you're trading cattle with, trinkets and pipes, I mean? So I think that that was where it came from. But, you need to stay and watch the whole film, because obviously this character being caught between these two cultures tried to find a middle way, was taken in by the Dutch, discarded by her own people at a certain point, and then discarded by the Dutch. So, you do have to see the whole journey.
Yes.
And this was also interesting for us, and I know for Kay when she was writing, and Margaret, that, do you, if you tackle an historical figure like this, do you hone in on one aspect of their life? And in her case, it was quite clear that we had to tell or cover her full journey, So, you know what, it's going to be interesting. And I know the big objective of Kay, and she says it all the time as well, it's a pity she's not here, but one of her big things is that we want to provoke debate, and we want people to talk about it, and we want people to look back, and you know, and it's good to debate these issues. And not everybody's going to agree with the choices made, you know. No, they're not, obviously, because it's a fictional story, which we say is inspired by historical facts.
I should just mention, Kay, unfortunately, was on a flight at the time we were going to air. We had asked if she could join us today, and unfortunately, it's just an airport timing issue more than anything else. I want to bring in somebody else who watched the movie with us last night for a different perspective on the film, and that's Monique Mortlock of our Eyewitness News team, who not only saw it with us, but Monique, afterwards you had the chance to interview some of the audience members about their response to the film, and to speak in particular to some of the Khoisan community members who were there. And I'm interested to know how you felt, firstly, and then how they felt about the movie.
Yes, Rufa, I think Roberta and Kay, and they got exactly what they wanted, that it sparked debate. It sparked quite a needed debate among our people. I mean, I've been punting this film on all of the social media because I believe it's an important story that many of us don't know about. I mean, even me, Crystal, I only found out about Kritoa about 2-3 years ago. These are stories that don't get told enough in schools. And I mean, a story like Kritoa's story is so important for all of us because that's where we came from, you know, and it made me question my identity. And afterwards, when I spoke to Chief Atumoa from Namakoland, he said it was a brilliant film, but he was, he felt he needed to see more of who Jan van Riebeeck really was, and he wanted more of the Kritoa and her people coming to the fore, more of the emotions and so on. And I told him, I'm playing devil's advocate here, because some might argue that, and it's something that Kay Ann said, it's that we don't have much recorded history of Kritoa, of the Khoisan people, of how they felt. Yes, we might have rock paintings, we might have word of mouth history through word of mouth, but we don't really have much recorded details about how these people felt. What we tend to go on is Jan van Riebeeck's writings, the settlers' diaries that they kept. And when I posed that question to him, he said, well, then it's up to us to critically engage and to radically think about history. And that blew me, because I never thought of it that way, because we tend to just take in what history tells us, to take in what we get taught at schools, and not really critically think, okay, so Jan van Riebeeck settled here in the 1600s, that's all good and well, we know the dates, we know the theory behind all of that, but how did the indigenous people feel? How did they feel being stripped of their land, being forced to barter when bartering was probably so uncommon for them, as Roberta mentioned, trading their cattle that they reared, that they nourished for their own purposes, trading it for trinkets and what is brand
goods
new,
of
what,
the value, yeah.
Goods that they didn't even know existed. So these are things that was highlighted in the film that really got me thinking. And that's why I believe it's important for everyone to watch this film. I mean, even Chief Atumoa said it's important for everyone to watch this film because there is such little representation of our people in the big screen, on the big screen, in the wider media, that when films like this get put out there, everyone needs to watch it. Because I was talking to my colleagues, many of them didn't even know who Kritoa was, and I told them, guys, go and watch this film. And when you watch the film afterwards, critically think about all the themes that came out there. That's why I love the ending. I don't want to spoil it, but the ending also just made me be like, I couldn't even sleep last night. And it made me speak to my parents about it, and I told them, guys, we need to chase back our ancestry, we need to do research, and that's why this film is important, but people also need to do their own research into their own history and the role that they played in history.
Monique Mortlock, thank you so much for sharing that with us. It's wonderful to get a different perspective. And I'm so delighted that the airport gods have spoken in our favor, and we have the writer, Kayanne Williams, on the line with us. Welcome to the conversation. I'm so glad the plane landed on time. Kay, it's a beautiful story that you've crafted that's translated into a really powerful and thought-provoking film. What was it that made you want to tell this story as a writer? And when did you first come across Kratoa and her story?
Hi, everyone. Nice to be here. Well, I, about 2011, Roberta and I wanted to do a documentary for a strand of documentaries called Hidden Histories. And it was about histories in our country's past that not a lot of people know about. So it's something that I love history, and it's something that was like my favorite subject of school. So it was something I was very passionate about, and I was thinking about what could I do, what could I present for this brief, and that was when a pastor friend of mine from the pulpit on a Sunday morning said that the reason that he believes, in his opinion, that colored people struggle with their identity and struggle with alcoholism is because of this ancestor called Kratoa or Ifa. And that sort of stirred something in me. It made me angry. I was confused. I didn't really understand what he was talking about, and I didn't feel that he necessarily knew what he was talking about. And so I started my own sort of research journey, and what I remember from school, from grade school, was that there were these two sentences about her in my history book that basically said that Ifa was or Kratoa Ifa was the domestic servant in Jan van Riebeck's household, and there were three or four chapters on Jan van Riebeck. So then I started to, and there was very little written about her. What's mostly written about her is written by Jan van Riebeck himself in his diaries, his opinion of her and of her character and of her service. And it changes over the years during their relationship. If you read his diaries very analytically and critically. But what really opened up her story for me was the conversations that I had with the different historians and professors that I talked to, Yassi Bredenkamp, Patrice Malherber, Yvette Abrams, all these professors and doctors who had done theses about her, about religion and Kratoa, about sexuality and Kratoa, about identity and Kratoa. So they had formulated these arguments and these sentiments about her based on the facts that they had surrounding her life. And I realized that here was an intelligent woman, a woman who was highly apt when it came to languages. She could speak five different languages. She was like a sponge in the house, in the van Riebeck household, and learned everything from languages to religion to etiquette, and would then transfer that to her people. So, you know, I think the relationship between her and the van Riebecks was casual in the beginning. She was allowed to come and go, but it became more strenuous and more strained as she became his interpreter, because he didn't believe in Harry, her uncle's services anymore. He believed that he was wily, and he was. And so this relationship started with her. So, you know, it was a journey that started based on something that someone had just flippantly said. But then what I discovered was someone in my past, someone in my history, in my lineage, and in the lineage of so many other people in South Africa that we can be proud of and that we can celebrate.
Okay, and the end product is a remarkable film, and as I think everyone in the room has said, it's a film that demands to be seen by South African audiences. Roberta, you've been incredibly well received by the international audiences that have seen this film. You've, as I mentioned in the start, won a string of awards. What do you think it is that makes this very South African story translate on such a wider international platform?
Story, and we don't have a lot of those stories. You know, we chose the festivals quite carefully. We chose festivals that had a sort of humanitarian slant, and we chose festivals that had a certain kind of emphasis on women directors, also on, you know, female characters. And I mean, there are so many characters in our history that can be celebrated and unpacked in this way that haven't been. Sadly. And I mean, Croteau's might have been the first woman, you know, that one wants to look at. But I mean, what about all the others since then, you know? And I think it's so important to be able to celebrate these women and to give them a voice and to understand, you know, from an ancestor point of view, what these, you know, what people went through. And the sacrifices that were made, and particularly in her case, because of being straddled between these two identities. And I think anyone who finds themselves sort of, you know, caught between two identities like she was, has got to be a very interesting person. And also represents a dialogue in terms of identity in South Africa. And for me, it's very interesting that, for example, Casper de Vries, who I, you know, have worked with in the past, and he heard that I was making this film, he was very excited. He hasn't seen it yet, but told me that Croteau was his ninth grandmother and that he had tracked her down. I had another guy phoning me, a farmer in the Free State, who Croteau was his 15th grandmother. And this is for me interesting that there is this common ancestor, you know, and I love what you said about tracing genealogy and tracing where you come from. I think it's important where you come from and what went before.
I wish we could carry on for another half an hour, but we can't. I just want to say thank you, first of all, for joining us. Thank you for making this film. It is a film that asks to be seen, demands to be seen by South African audiences, and I hope they will go and see it in big numbers when it opens on circuit this Friday. Thank you for being with us, Roberta Durant, the director, and Crystal, who plays the lead role. It's a phenomenal performance of a beautiful, beautiful story that you've told, really with a huge amount of delicacy. Thank you for the role as well, Crystal Donna Roberts, and Monique Mortlock of EWN. Thanks for your perspective as well.